Thank you. Carol, would you mind also moving the microphone for me? Thanks. Give me a little freedom, you know, social distancing and everything. Yeah, thank you. She touched it, so I can't touch it. Hey, that was gorgeous, girl.
Thank you.
You too, Chris. Thank you so much. Really wonderful. I hope you all stood up at home, right? Okay. And by the way, whenever the practitioner prays, if you're a practitioner or a minister, I want you to stand up. You know that God is watching you to see if you stand up, okay? All right, so let me get down to business here. Today is Mother's Day, and again, I just want to honor all of the mothers that are watching us, the mothers that are in the house, or, you know, the whole continuum of motherhood that Jennifer spoke about in the meditation that she read. People that have had wonderful relationships with their children and their mothers, people who have had challenging relationships with their children and their mothers, just the whole continuum. Pet mothers, like I am. I don't have any kids, but I have a lot of pets. And just everyone who is a mother in one way or another, and also just to include everybody, everyone who has a mother. I think probably everybody has a mother. So you are included in this service. Another way to be in the spirit of inclusion is to recognize that in spiritual teachings like this, in mystical teachings like the Science of Mind teaching, that we talk about how God is not necessarily a person, but a principle. It's a principle of love or wholeness or absolute reality or whatever it is you want to call it. And I was thinking that a mother is kind of the same thing. I mean, certainly a mother is a physical entity and a physical form here on earth, but a mother is also a principle. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the principle of mothering and what that is and what that means. In order to talk about the principle of mothering, I want to tell you about a discovery that I've made during the pandemic, and I hope that some of you are making the same discovery. Many of the people that I come to, that I speak to, who come to this center, struggle with either having been in a church that was punishing in some way, or have been raised in a family that was less than supportive. And we know that parents do the best they can, but sometimes they make mistakes. I had wonderful parents and a wonderful family, but still, just through learning and habit and the human race and all of the messages that we receive, for many, many years, I struggled with the idea of feeling unworthy. I wondered if I was worthy enough to exist and worthy enough to be loved, worthy enough to receive the goodness of the kingdom of spirit, the kingdom of heaven that is here on earth. And so many people that I speak to struggle with that same type of challenge. And then we try a lot of strategies to ameliorate our sense of unworthiness. We read self-help books. We go to therapy. We go to group therapy. We go to churches. We pray. We meditate. Now, if you've done any of those things, let's do a show of thumbs at home, or a show of pinkies if you are embarrassed about it. Show of thumbs is when you want to talk about it. Show of pinkies is when you don't want to talk about it. Hope you're all getting that by now. I tried all of those things, and yet I still had this unbearable urge to continue to try and prove myself, to always prove myself. If I went to a new venue or a new place to speak or just was with a new circle of friends, I still felt the need that I had to prove myself, prove that I was worthy and prove that I had the right to be there and the right to be loved. Now, that has gotten a lot better as I've gotten older and as I've gotten more experience and done deeper spiritual work. But I'll tell you that the one thing that really came out for me during this pandemic, particularly, and right before and during the pandemic, the one thing that really helps me stop that energy of seeking and proving and trying to be adequate and trying to be worthy and recognizing that, as it said in the reading, that life kind of sets us up with these vicissitudes that it offers us and the challenges that come our way and our own inner, she said self-loathing in the reading, I would say self-doubt. But the one thing that seemed to take care of all of that for me is the practice of devotion. Of divine devotion. And I think that that is one of the many essences of motherhood, is devotion. So I'm going to talk a little bit about divine devotion today and what it means for you, what it means for mothers, what it means for all of us, what it means for our center and for our world. Oddly, in certain circles, devotion is seen as something that is not a good thing to practice. In New Thought teachings, sometimes people frown upon the idea of devotion because they say, what are you devoting yourself to? You're devoting yourself to God. Does that imply that God is outside of you? And of course, we teach that we are one with God. In her book, the book that we're featuring this month, Wild Mercy by Mira by Star, she talks about the non-dualists and how the non-dualists also sometimes are opposed to devotion. They say that if you're devoting yourself to something, again, that implies two-ness. And the non-dualists are all about oneness. There is only one of us. Now, Mira by Star refutes that by saying that both form and principle are important aspects of the planet Earth and existence. That in so many spiritual teachings, you know, in the Hindu teaching, Brahman became form so that it could remember itself, experience the divine discovery of remembering itself. And in the Christian teaching, that the Word, the Logos, became flesh and dwelt among us. And again, my understanding of that purpose is so that we could be fully human and fully divine. So there is this thing of spirit and matter matters to spirit, or it wouldn't have become matter. So there is a two-ness that is within the oneness, but it is still part of oneness. And what Mira by Star says is that we can, in our full embrace of the human condition, we can understand that sometimes our longing for God is the presence of God itself. The longing for God is God itself. And that as we long, it even creates a greater sense of connection, greater sense of devotion. And this is all just for us, to bring us to that place of being home and being at one with the one that we are. She says that strict non-dualists are very dualistic in their approach to devotion. And I'm thinking that in this community, we are big enough to know that non-duality contains oneness and also two-ness. Non-duality, oneness has no opposite. Everything is contained within it. Now, if that didn't make sense to you, I'm going to get back to it in just a minute, but I want to talk about one more objection that I hear about devotion, that some people object to the idea of devotion. And, you know, again, I think this often comes from folks that have come from a religion that is punishing, and a religion that wants you to devote to some authority figure that may not necessarily be someone that you want to devote your life to. Even God is sometimes seen as a punishing authority figure. But true devotion is devotion to the higher self or the higher being, or how the divine urge moves through us so that we can express our individualized spirit of God as it was meant to be here on the planet Earth. That's true devotion. It's not devotion to some type of outside external authority figure. You know, in the Wild Mercy book, Mira by Star talks about her namesake, Mirabai, who was a Hindu prophet and poet and songstress. And she is kind of one of the paragons of devotion. In fact, she's known for the bhakti tradition, which is devotional yoga. And Mira by Star completely flouted all of the social norms of her day. She lived in the 1500s in India, and at that time she was a young girl, and she was married as a teenager, and prior to that she had fallen in love with Lord Krishna. Someone had given her a little blue statue of Lord Krishna, and she just fell in love with it, and she, from that moment on, she knew that she was the bride of Lord Krishna. So when she got married to this guy, to this rich noble, she didn't consummate the marriage because she said, I'm already taken. I'm already with Lord Krishna. Now, they were not very happy about that, okay? Her husband and her in-laws were not happy about that. So they tried to do all kinds of things to get rid of her. It said in the Mirabai Star book that they made an elixir that was poison for her, and she drank it, but it turned into wild honey on her lips because she was so pure. And they also gave her a bouquet of flowers that had a venomous snake stuck inside of it. But again, the snake turned into a spray of lilacs and didn't hurt her. Then, praise Jesus, her husband went to war and got killed. Sorry. Her husband died in the war. Again, though, she flouted social, is that a word, flout? Okay, she flouted social tradition, and she was supposed to jump onto his funeral pyre and die with him, but she's like, I'm not doing that. He's not my husband. Lord Krishna is mine. I belong to Lord Krishna. And so after that, she left her in-laws, and she started becoming a wandering poet and songstress that influenced many, many people with her devotional style and her great love of love. So you see what I mean? Being devotional, offering yourself, surrendering, is not being a wimp. In fact, it's being extremely courageous. As I'm sure many of you know, I'm sure many of you, many of us, have offered ourselves to the divine, and we know that it's a little treacherous, but we do it anyway, and then it feels just so right. The other thing about devotion that I want to say is that I think devotion is one of those givens in life, that we're always devoting ourselves to something. Do we want to devote ourselves to fear and self-doubt and looking for evidence of our unworthiness? Or would we like to devote ourselves to faith and love and purity and joy? All of this is possible. All of this is doable. All of this is yours right now. All of this is ours right now. We just have to do it. You know, one of the things that came up as I was pondering this too is that we often will devote ourselves to the separate self, to the ego that Hugh spoke about in the reading. The ego that is useful, and it helps us post things on social media, and it helps us parallel park. I must not have a very good ego then, because I'm not a good parallel parker. But anyway, it helps us organize our lives, but sometimes we let the ego be in the driver's seat, and we do whatever we can to support the ego's fears and the ego's doubts and the ego's willfulness. When really, it's not about obliterating the ego, it's just putting it in the back seat where it belongs and devoting ourselves to spirit. You know, I had an encounter with this during the pandemic that was, again, very eye-opening to me. And it feels like it belongs in this talk, and I'm gonna figure out while I'm telling this story why it belongs in this talk. But it's about ego and spirit, and being able to observe when spirit is in the front seat or when spirit is in the back seat and ego is in charge. Devotion to ego or spirit. So I know I've shared before from this stage during the pandemic that it was tricky at the beginning. It was challenging to try and get everything turned around instantaneously and apply all of these new social distancing guidelines and all of the new rules, and trying to make sure that everybody was safe, and also trying to make sure that our congregation felt engaged and supported. And there was a lot to do. And you know, this is where the ego is helpful. I like challenges, and I was, you know, I get very sort of, have you ever seen the old, like, rollerblade shows, you know, where those women are, roller derby, where the women are skating, and they're like, hoo, and hoo, and hoo, you know, they're kicking people out of the way. I used to watch that with my dad and my mom when I was a kid, and I loved roller derby. It was like one of my favorite shows. I wanted to be one of those ladies when I grew up. And I kind of am, because when obstacles come up, I feel like a roller derby lady. You know, I will chant to Ganesh, the remover of obstacles, and I'll be like, Om Gam Ganapataye Maha, hu, Om Gam Ganapataye Maha, hu. Okay, so, anyway. And the obstacles are things like, you know, people's opinions of how things should be done, or an obstacle with the bank that we were having, or an obstacle with trying to figure out the next right thing to do. And it's just like, I've got this. I have so got this. So there's a lot of sort of assertive work towards understanding that I've got this, that we have this, and that's a beautiful thing. And then one day, I went to a bank to inquire about this issue that we were having, and I felt afterwards that I needed a reward. I had already had my pre-ward. Now, after the bank, I needed a reward, and so I went to Starbucks. Many of you know that I have a little addiction problem with Starbucks, but I went anyway. And while I was waiting in line at Starbucks, I was wearing a mask. The person in front of me was not wearing a mask, and he was leaning all over the counter, and he was lecturing the barista about the various flaws and merits of all of the different sweeteners that they offered. Now, it was taking a very long time, and I wanted my reward, so I did a fake cough. The man in front of me heard the fake cough. He turned around, not wearing a mask, and started coughing on me, and then started cursing me up, down, and sideways, language that I haven't heard since I worked at Bellevue in New York. And it went on and on and on. And for whatever reason, I was able to stay very poised. The only thing that I said to him was, I spoke to him the way that I speak to my dogs. When my dogs are growling and snapping at each other, I say to them, well, you're Grumpy McGrumperson today, aren't you? And I said that to the man, and he didn't like hearing that, whatever. So anyway, he finally left. And I went up to the barista, and the first thing I said to her was, dude, I'm really going to need to work on my fake cough. That wasn't it. And, you know, note to self, when I go home, I'm going to talk to my husband, who's an actor, and say, honey, how do you do a fake cough that's convincing, that won't invoke that kind of rage? But, you know, the thing is, okay, about devotion, in that moment, I was devoted to poise and equanimity. He was devoted to his anger and his outrage and his feeling that I had dissed him somehow. But my ability at that moment, and it doesn't happen all the time, I got to tell you, it doesn't happen all the time, in my ability to be devoted to poise and trying to be as kind as possible, somehow I found additional grace in terms of seeing him, and I was actually grateful that this exchange had happened, because I don't run into people like that very often. And I hear about folks like that on the news all the time, but I don't really have a firsthand experience of that. So I was very grateful to be in the witness of that type of consciousness, that type of consciousness that is so dark, that sees an enemy wherever it goes, that sees an enemy in a fake cough, and can you move along just a tad, because I really want my chocolate chip cookie. It was such a blessing to be in that consciousness and to understand it better. So that's devotion to something greater versus devotion to the appearance of somebody that's acting in a not very appropriate manner. The other thing that happened, though, is shortly after that, maybe 2 or 3 days later, I was still doing my very aggressive thing of you know, fighting the obstacles, being roller derby lady, and that's the Three Stooges, by the way. And doing all of that. And I was feeling like really, really good, like I was getting this, and that man had yelled at me, and I was so calm and so poised. And then it was time to stop for the day, and I went into the kitchen to make my milkshake, my diet milkshake that I love dearly because it has chocolate in it. And I put the stuff in, and I tried to screw the lid on the top of it, and it wouldn't go. I couldn't screw the lid on the top of my Arbonne milkshake. And I just put my head on the counter, and I just felt everything collapsed, and I said, this is too hard. And people would think that maybe I was talking about the whole thing, the pandemic and all that, but I was talking about the milkshake. I really wanted that milkshake, but it just felt like too much. And I felt my husband coming over to help me, but then I'm like, no, I got this. I'm going to put the milkshake on. And I did. However, That was a lesson in my own devotion to the wrong thing, my own devotion in something that does not serve me, my own devotion to the inability to ask for help, my own devotion to working beyond my capacity to work, my own devotion to exhausting myself in the alleged service to something, my own devotion to my insecurities, my own devotion to not being able to step away. The thing that I was working on that day was something very challenging, and I actually had three people, our board president, Lonnie, my husband, and our accountant say, "Why don't you just step away for a while?" I was like, "I can't step away. I'm in the roller derby. Those girls don't step away." So I was able to observe my devotion to something that was not healthy for me, and that also was a beautiful thing. You see, and that's how we know when we're kind of in alignment, when we're, for lack of a better word, doing it right, is that we start to see, it starts to, even the things that would normally trouble us start to feel so good because we've grown in spirit, and we've seen the portals open up and see that everything truly is for us. And what a wonderful thing to be devoted to. You know, that's one of my main devotions, is to recognize that everything is for us. And when there's polarity happening in the world, which it certainly is, to be devoted to holding that space of reconciliation, to see how these two opposites are really for each other. That is a wonderful thing. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of devotional ideas come up for all of you. One of the things about being devoted, though, this is a warning, is that it may require a bit of sacrifice. I have a story about sacrifice that's from Mother's Day. And to give you a little context, last January, back in the days when we could crowd 60 people in that room over there, back in the good old days, although these are the good old days too, in their own way, I was teaching a class called Holy Abundant, which was based on the book called It's Not Your Money by Tosha Silver. And because I love paradox so dearly, I am obsessed with paradox, and I asked the students, "Have you ever noticed that sometimes scarcity is really abundance?" And they wondered about that, so I said, "Well, you know, go home and think about that, and I want to hear about what you come up with next week." And they had amazing stories. We have amazing people in this church that just understand what we're talking about so beautifully and so deeply. But I had this one woman come back who gave me permission to share the story. It's Mary. And Mary said that one of the things that she came up with in terms of when is scarcity really abundance was that many, many years ago when her son was little and she was a single mom, she had moments where, or days, where she didn't have enough money. And sometimes she didn't have enough money for both of them to eat. And so she was experiencing scarcity. And she always chose that her son should eat and that she should go hungry. And we asked her, "Well, how is that abundance?" And she said, "Because it was an abundance of love. There was so much love in that choice, so much love for the well-being of my child that I was able to sacrifice my own well-being, my own comfort for my beautiful child." Sacrifice is often seen as a swear word in New Thought churches, but I believe in sacrifice because sacrifice makes things sacred. And often when we are learning to devote ourselves to something pure and holy, we have to sacrifice something. It may not be a horrible thing. It may be something like just sacrificing the ways of the ego. I have another practitioner here who struggles sometimes with recognizing that it is her job to reveal beauty, and sometimes she feels ashamed of that because she was raised by Quakers. But you have to sacrifice the old scripts that you got, the old messages that keep you somehow feeling like you're proving yourself to your parents, even though they're long gone. We have to sacrifice something, and sacrifice is not always comfortable. But as we sacrifice, as the foot leaves the realm of sacrifice into the newness, the goodness floods in such an amazing and beautiful way that we just can't even believe why we ever held on to that old thing for so long. Like I said, I think our spiritual center gets it. I didn't ask about sacrifice on Facebook this past week, but I did when I posted the question of the week that I do on Saturdays. I asked, what are you willing to devote your life to? Today I devote my life to, and then fill in the blank. Today I devote myself to. So I'm going to read the responses. Jennifer devotes herself to being present. Christine, trusting God, her higher self. Kat devotes herself to the power thruple that is God and my marriage. Does everybody know what a thruple is? Do I need to define that? It's like a couple, but it's with three people. Okay, except she's saying God and her wife and herself. Okay. Doreen is devoted to being kind. Debbie is devoted to devoting herself to what she can control. Judy, devoted to expressing more joy and love. Lonnie, devoted to moving from fear to faith. Gail, doing more acts of kindness. Dot, looking for and seeing the good in what is. Anne, devoted to peace, light, and acceptance. Gia, holding a deep space for peace. Nick, devoted to love. Lucky, devoted to discovering ways to move through the world gently. Ed is devoted to staying alive. Fred, that's a song, and it has the word mother in it too, doesn't it? Whether you're a mother or what? Okay, never mind. Okay. Fred is devoted to opening his heart to love and opening his soul to bliss, opening his mind to gladness. Chris is devoted to what might be arising with his beloved and with family and friends and connection. Nancy is devoted to being a joy to be around. Kathy, devoted to compassion and love. Jonna is devoted to staying in her mask and gloves for the safety of self and others and to re-enter society in a state of shalom. There's more. Hang on. Here we go. Keith is devoted to reaching out to all of the mothers in his life, thanking them for their love. Janet, being a space of all is well and devoted to a world that works for everyone. Jan is devoted to patience. Vicky is devoted to sharing joy and gratitude. Dave is devoted to the peace that passes understanding. Pat is devoted to sharing joy and gratitude. Sue devotes herself to unity. Amy devotes herself to the mystical realms. Bernie devoted to listening through a filter of loving acceptance. Bernie Shane devoted to walking more. Lita, kinder to herself and practice more self-care. Robin, understanding that control is not in her control. Carol, love and understanding. Lacey, eating more vegetables and considering new food choices. Anna, devoted to the wisdom of the divine. Bill, to trust his higher self to love deeper. Annie, devotes herself to express gratitude and love to her visiting daughters, even though she can't hug them. And Dave, to the power of love. Dina, being fully present to now. Bill, devoted to radiating gratitude, and Diane, devoted to inner peace. Now, can you imagine? Can you imagine if we make that a priority? If we all devote ourselves to those things, and we can borrow things from other people and devote ourselves to all of that stuff, can you imagine what the world would be like? What your individual world would be like? Your lens would completely shift, and you would see the world anew. My lens would completely shift, and I would see the world anew. Our collective lens would shift, and we would see the world anew. And as you know, as we see it, it starts to change. We believe what we see. Is that the right way? We see what we believe, right? Yeah, we see what we believe. Thank you, Reverend Carol. We see what we believe. Thank you. So I guess, are you willing? You know, all of those things come with a little bit of sacrifice. They come with a little bit of sacrifice. You know, the ones that are easier for me are the ones like where I'm going to make better food choices, right? I might have to sacrifice something that I really want to eat in the moment, knowing that this other thing is going to help me feel much better. The one about holding, listening, and love. I called somebody yesterday about an ongoing discussion that I was having, and I was like, you know, I'm going to try something new. I'm going to try listening and not being quite so bossy. And it kind of worked, I have to tell you. But all of those things involve a little bit of sacrifice. So this week, as you contemplate your devotional practice and what that will be, what principle, what virtue, what value you will devote yourself to, also take a good look at what you might be sacrificing and see how you're clinging to that and how much of a relief it might be if you just loosen your grip on it and just let it go. let it go. Or at the very least, just put it in the back seat for a while. It'll come back if you need it. All of those things that I mentioned, self-help books, trying to improve ourselves, even the aggressive roller derby actions of getting stuff done, all of those things have their place. But the true focus is on our devotion to the divine, the will of love, offering ourselves surrender, and as Mirabai Starr said, dissolving. One more thing. Another way to cultivate devotion is to notice the devotion of others. And so every week I've been trying to come up with three new names that I don't always talk about. Sometimes I'll do some repeaters though, of ways that I see, just from my contacts with folks and Facebook and other forms of contact, ways that I see people in this center practicing the principles. You know, one of the beautiful parts about this is that sometimes when we're practicing these principles, we don't think we're doing anything. But actually, that's Howard Thurman says that you know, our moments of devotion are not necessarily in those big aha moments, right? Everybody go, oh, well, my voice is a little rough. It's not always in those big aha moments where the arm of God or the angels appear. It's more often in the little picky, annoying, frustrating things that we do, or even just the simple, ordinary things that we do. So here's a simple, ordinary thing that made a difference to me. As you know, I've been talking a lot about the choir back there, the choir of mystics. And they were on Facebook one time, and one of our congregants, Dave, did a post that I just loved, and I think about it all the time. He said, "The choir looks good, but they're a little flat." Ba-dum-bum, right? Yeah, Rex Hart is doing a bum-bum at his home. You know, and from now on, in my head, I refer to them as the flat choir, and it makes me smile every time. And I think everybody in this room smiled, and I think hopefully that you folks at home smiled, and Dave felt those ripples go out into the world of electronics. Another beautiful act of devotion, and that's devotion to joy, which is, you know, is challenging for us sometimes. Another act of devotion is devotion to service. And these are people that I've mentioned today already, but I'm so touched that both Norm and Deborah Walters want to devote themselves in a bigger way to this congregation in terms of serving. Norm by helping people create kitchen gardens, and Deborah Walters by cooking food for seniors and also engaging others to be part of that support. That is just such an amazing thing, you know, just. And I see that as the future after the pandemic, is that there's going to be all kinds of new ways that we will be called to support one another and devote ourselves to the love that this community is. So that's another thing. And then the third thing is that several of us participated in a love parade the other day on Friday, and it was very impromptu. It was put together very quickly. I was in it. I didn't even have a sign in my car because I didn't have time. But we drove around to various, mostly retirement facilities and a couple of hospitals, and just honked and acknowledged and held up signs for the healthcare workers and also for the senior citizens who have been so isolated in this time. And you know, you would think, oh, it's not a real parade. It's just cars. What's the big deal? But it was so touching to me, in fact, that it brought tears to my eyes when I was doing it, to see the healthcare administrators and nurses and doctors that had come out especially to see us go by. And what touched me the most was that they were taking videos of it with their phones, because they were going to share it with people later because it meant something to them. That, and also going past one of the retirement homes where they had balconies and seeing the elderly folks come out and wave to us, people that have been isolated for weeks now, over many weeks now. So it's just those little things that matter. And our church members set that up. Lucky and Judy were in charge, and so many wonderful people participated, people that I haven't seen for a long time. It was so great to see them, even if it was through the window of a car. But it's that energy that I think is going to save us. You know, sacrifice is a word you don't hear in religious science very much. Salvation is also not a word you hear very much. And I'm not talking about salvation by one person, by believing in one person, but it's the salvation that happens when we believe in all of us. When we believe in the Christ principle, or the Krishna principle, or the love principle, or the wholeness principle, whatever it is that you want to call it, when we believe that that is moving through us in a new and greater way, and that it is sparked by adversity. It is not dampened by adversity. It rises to the top in the face of challenges, and it rises to the top in the face of our surrender. So as we let go, as we offer our lives to the divine, as we devote ourselves to that which is right, noble, just, true, and loving, to that which is joyful, that which is peaceful, that which is kind, the whole world changes. And I know that we can do this. I know that we're up to it. So let's do that now. Let us dissolve in prayer as we devote ourselves to love.